I will call the meeting to order because it looks like we have many wonderful testifiers. I waited a couple minutes because we had session and some of our committees are running a little bit late, and I hate to have people start giving us testimony with not enough legislators here, but we will go ahead and start. And do we have a quorum? No, we don't. So we won't approve the minutes. We will start out with Frazee Public Schools. If you could be coming down, we have we wanted to actually hear from you. Some of you may have been at the Senate hearing last fall, and some of us were there, and most of us were not. Go ahead and have a seat. And so we wanted to, because we are now to the point in session where we're going to be actually discussing education, you know, I think it should have been discussed first, and probably a lot of people in this room would agree with that, but we're getting around to it now, and we wanted to hear from people so we have it fresh on our minds, the status of education funding and levy referendums and all the rest. So we appreciate everybody who's here to testify and to listen, and welcome. So each person, of course, needs to state their name and title for the tape if you're a parent or some type of school employee. And then we will listen, and members have questions after each group is done. Then we'll ask them, and we figure we have, you know, up to 10 minutes for each group or less if people take less, but that would be about the maximum to get through all the groups. So welcome, and whichever one of you is first, state your name and why you're here for the tape.
Karen Sanders, Superintendent, Frazee Virgus Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today. I've got a short career in administration, 5 years as a superintendent, and in the 5 years as superintendent, we've had to seek a referendum every single year. And I stand at passing three referendums and two failed referendums. I'm currently the superintendent in Frazee Virgus School District, which is in northern Minnesota. Been there for 3 years. We passed our referendum last fall after five attempts in 7 years. There is a handout that's been provided to you with the historical cost containments of the district over the last 5 years. It's a district with about a $10 million budget, or at least it was a district with a $10 million budget. And over the 5 year period of time, we've cut $2.8 million. Did not have an existing referendum on the record and realized that we needed to generate additional revenue or the sustainability of our school district was in jeopardy. We had four failed attempts, like I said, since 2000, and that's indicated in the information that's provided to you. And we were facing FOD in the face, facing a loss of enrollment. The situation in our district was we're 10 miles from Detroit Lake, 12 miles from Perham. Every year we made cuts. We lost students to open enrollment, so we were playing the open enrollment game. We were playing the Russian roulette with which sports program, which activity, which curriculum that we could make cuts in, knowing that any of those cuts would mean that we would lose students, which means that we would lose additional dollars. Thankfully, we were successful last fall. This year, our current operation, going into next year, our current operation will be balanced. We will not have to make any cuts. This will be the first time in 7 years the district will not have had to make cuts. But I am very fearful. I caution my board to go forward with great insecurities towards what the future may bring. With a large deficit in the state of Minnesota, we're probably going to be apprehensive to add anything back. We've got several staff members, several positions, several sporting programs, things we'd like to do to enhance our district and make it a better school for our students. However, we're probably going to wait until the legislative session ends and make decisions at that time. And if I'm not so much concerned about the amount of money that's provided in educational funding, it's the consistency of the funding. And that's been difficult for us to deal with, and that's any school in the state of Minnesota, difficult to deal with and difficult to manage. So if there's something that I would like to see done, it would be some consistency in terms of the funding that's provided to education. The second thing I'd like to see, and this also affects all the districts in the state of Minnesota, is special education funding. If there could be a system or a formula that would better distribute those dollars back to the local districts, would be very beneficial. Every year, there's several districts across the state that are sitting there with a question mark and uncertain what's going to happen to their district and their fund balance because of special education. Our district's been fortunate where we haven't been caught in that threshold, but I'm fearful that that may happen to us at some point in time. But I'll thank you for your time. The real presenter here is actually going to be Amy Erickson, and I'll turn it over to Amy.
My name is Amy Erickson, and I'm a parent in the Frazee Vergus School District. I was a graduate from Frazee Vergus, and I have four children, two who are in the district and two who will be joining the district in the next few years. I provided a handout that's a door knocker, which was used for our referendum last fall, and we found it to be a very useful tool to provide our public with some information. The other handout is just a white piece of paper that I feel almost any school in the state could write this book called Public School Finance, the Minnesota Way, a Backwaters Approach. And each of these sections really hit home for us, and I'd just like to share with you a little bit of our story as to how the funding situation has impacted not only our school but our community. Although we don't live on the Tug Fork River, the feud between the Hatfields and the McCoys lives on. Only the names have changed. No voters and the yes voters. The dispute started similarly over property. The property that I speak of is public education. Whose property is public education? More importantly, who should be responsible to pay for it? Fiscal responsibility for this property shifted dramatically in 2000 from the state level to the local level. ISD 23 Frazee Vergus was fortunate to be well managed and survive this dramatic shift in funding for a couple of years. An operating levy was first sought in 2004, asking $500 per pupil, which failed by 1,000 votes. In 2005, we asked for $700 per pupil and again failed by 302 votes. Voters demanded more specifics than general operating funds, so we went out with two questions in 2006. Both failed. With each campaign, mud was slung. The community became more and more disjointed. The school employees became victims of verbal and emotional abuse. Students were caught in the middle. On one side, they had their families and the communities saying that they're overtaxed and complaining about mistruths relating to the school fiscal responsibility. On the other side, they had their education suffering as over 25 certified teaching positions were cut and 15 non-certified teaching positions. Several extra and co-curricular activities were cut, and our out-of-date curriculum, technology, and safety issues mounted. 2006 brought parents forward to lead the referendum, trying to spread the truth from a community viewpoint. When the referendum failed, those individuals were not willing to seek another, as the emotional pain from defeat was too great. In January of 2007, three moms band together, forming PACE, Parents and Community for Education. For the next 10 months, we learned all we could about district finances, the public perception of the district, including its finances, and we spent countless hours going door to door and listening and educating. Over $11,000 was spent on radio and newspaper ads, mailers, handouts, yard signs, billboards, and the like to educate our community. And if a dollar figure were attached to the hours we poured in, the figure would be astronomical. That only represents PACE's contribution, not our district's expenses. The campaign finances were straining, but the greater strain was on our community relationships. On every city block, there was at least one home for sale. The housing development in town nearly gave lots away to avoid bankruptcy. New businesses considering the area refrained, for they knew that a community that would not support its education would not be able to provide a workforce. Students who open enrolled out of the district took their families with them. Once they left the district for their education, they did their shopping elsewhere, they did their churching elsewhere, and it just spiraled. The district was cutting another $1.1 million, and as many as 17 more staff were going to be eliminated. Our largest employer in the district was Wavery. As these hard truths became known, our community realized that our school was the cornerstone. Hearts and minds open to the truth. It required every leader to take a stand and every person to share the truth with their neighbors. Ours truly was a grassroots effort and a successful one at that. Referendums that used to pay for the extras are now buying my first graders crayons, paper, and pencils. Statewide, schools are crying out for help. How many more students have to suffer? How many more communities need to lose their vitality? Where is Minnesota going to get an educated workforce in the near future if we don't invest in our education now? Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Heidkirchen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know exactly where you're at because I have a lot of school districts very similar to yours. I just want to correct you when you said 2000. Actually, the tax reform bill 2001 was the beginning of the end for school districts like yours. When we, right now, and Representative Marquardt, not in the US here.
Okay.
Representative,
Representative Heidkirchen, we're going to not take a long time to discuss things, but for this one, you can go ahead.
Representative Marquardt, how much of a shortfall do we still have since the, we did some property tax relief back in 02 when I wasn't here? How much of a shortfall are we still in collections as far as for school districts and everything going? The bill that we passed. Do you remember? Okay, right now, my understanding. You're the property tax relief. But I'm just saying, you can correct me if I'm wrong, sorry, Madam Chair, but my understanding is that since we did the property tax reform bill, that we are collecting about $1 billion less.
Well, Representative Heidkirchen, I'm going to ask the staff if they know what your question is. If they don't, we're going to press on. And if they do, they're going to give a very short, because this is our day to listen
okay.
to the...
But anyways, within that...
Representative Heidkirchen, hang on. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, we could take this up perhaps at a different time, but how we measure that gap in 2001 is kind of a tricky deal. So
anyway. It's a long answer. We'll just continue it, because today's our day to listen. And Representative Heidkirchen, any suggestions for solutions we are going to be discussing in this committee, but not today because this is our listening day. And I appreciate the eloquent testimony we've heard. And are there any other questions, Representative Anzell?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and to the presenters who are going to follow. This member is going to be looking for suggestions. I'm going to be looking for options. I'm going to be looking for solutions. I'm really open, and I hope you all can be as blunt as you can possibly be, because that's the only way we're going to get at this. And I too have the same situations in the same kinds of school districts, and I think everybody around this table does. So please don't be afraid to be blunt.
Representative Van Zelt, I'm sure they haven't been, and I think that's what they need to keep doing, because other groups around here are very blunt, and the educators are so used to putting a good face on what we have done that the public, I don't think, knows the half of it, and maybe a lot of legislators don't either, especially those not on this committee. And we have to be your fighters, so you have to tell us, you know, what to do. Not what to do. We know we should be doing, but you need to make us do what we know we should do. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I apologize for not hearing the testimony, but I'm very familiar with the Frazee situation, just being a few miles out of the district that I represent. And, you know, there's only so many times you can go to the well, and that's not just happening to Frazee, but many others, but we're being forced to fund on the local level things that should be funded on the state level. And the taxpayers just can't do it anymore, and districts are having a huge problem.
and it's going to create a huge disparity in the state, Madam Chair, but appreciate you being here. So.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. That may have been what Representative Heidgerken was trying to get at, and that's what we... But I will say that in addition to the disparity, I think we all have to agree that all school districts are underfunded, and that's, I think, what the education community has done a better job with even than legislators. Representative Demmer, and then we're going to stop with that, Representative Heidgerken. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very quickly, can I ask, what's the enrollment done in the last 5 years at the Frazee-Virgus School District?
Superintendent Stender.
3 years ago, we were at 1,021. Now we're at 921.
Okay, so about 100 students over the last 3 years?
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you very much to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Fergus Falls. Welcome, and whoever's going first can state your name and why you're here.
My name is Darrell Tunkus. I'm a school board member of Fergus Falls, mm-hmm. and we are a district that's in statutory operating debt. This is my second year on the board. The first year we had to cut $1.8 million. This year we're projected to, or we are cutting $2.3 million, and we're projected to cut another million out of the budget each of the next 4 years. So that's about $8.1 million out of roughly a $24 million budget. And as you can imagine, cutting a third of a budget, you're not cutting frills anymore. It's okay to cut some. You can re-examine how you do things and maybe find different ways to do it. But when you cut over 30% out of the budget, you're cutting into the meat, and the students are suffering. And also, it is very demoralizing for the teachers that we have left, not to mention those who are no longer with us. One of the problems, and I know the Frazee superintendent mentioned it, is that with open enrollment, there's a need to compete with neighboring districts, and in Fergus Falls we have three parochial elementary schools, we have a parochial high school, we have another private high school, and then we have a lot of homeschoolers. And when you have to make the cuts of the magnitude that we have over the past few years, it gets to be very difficult to compete, and it gets to be kind of a vicious circle where we can't provide what we would like to provide, and then the people leave and they take their funding with them. As far as what we have done to try to rectify this, we have passed a bond referendum to deal with our facilities issues. That's just getting underway. So that will help in the future, but it's not the sole solution. We do have an operating levy of $415 per student, and we may have to go out again. That expires in 2011. We may have to go out early and try to increase that, or at least renew it for sure. And the other thing I'd like to point out is that when the state doesn't properly fund, and Representative Marquardt just referenced this, the burden does shift to the local taxpayers, the property taxpayers, the operating levies, which are going on all over the state. And then in our case, we've had to increase fees for all-day kindergarten and for the co-curricular activities to the point where they're really getting almost out of line. They're higher than we would like them to be, but in order to balance our budgets, we've had to raise them to this point. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tungstad. Hello, I'm Melanie Cole, and thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for having us in. I'm here as a school board member and a mother of three children in the Fergus Falls School District, and we are in statutory operating debt. And we have, for the past 11 years, made budget cuts. And as my fellow school board member indicated, we will be doing that again for the foreseeable future. Part of what undoes our budget planning is the funding formula that accounts for student heads and doesn't cover any and uses that as the base formula. That isn't a comprehensive manner in which to fund a larger operation such as a school district. Inflation is hitting us very hard, even when we adjust for the reducing our staff to match our student count. We still have to try to accommodate for inflation that is not matching what we are getting from the state. When Governor Pawlenty goes around the state and says He gave the schools 8% this funding cycle, and that's plenty. I would like to relay to you that for us, that meant 0.8% last year and 0.9% this year. Special education funding took money that we had already expended from the budget, and so between what it did to what we had already outlaid and where we're at now, it was a significant hit for us. In our area, we are a regional center school. As Gerald Tongseth indicated to you, we have a variety of other educational opportunities, but one thing we do provide very uniformly is our special education services. So here as the regional center, we attract more special education students, and we get less funding because of it. And so in that way, we are not being treated equitably with our neighbors. I would note we have many positive things going on in our school, but that's not what I'm here to talk to you about today. I do have suggestions, and some of them are so obvious I'll pass on them, but as a school board member...
No, we don't want to hear that.
Madam Chair would remind me our times are short. however, I would...
Suggestions, though, we're all ears.
Yeah.
All ears. All right, well, we need to regionalize teacher salary negotiations. We have people off the street coming in unfamiliar with the language and parameters of contract negotiations, and we have Education Minnesota, a dynamic operation on the other side of the table. We need some force, and we'll get that if we can collaborate. Regionalized school administration. I didn't check with all the superintendents to see if they like this idea, but I think it can easily, I think it can be accomplished. I think it can benefit our system. And then to, readjust how this taxing is being done. And I just find it ironic that two of the largest components of what we deal with in a budgetary consideration, where our funding comes from, often now is through our levies, our operating and our building levies, and that comes from our local taxpayers. And then the other, and the state doesn't particularly aid us in that venture. And the other significant financial piece we have is the budget negotiations, and again, we are standing alone without state support on that, either with parameters other than the deadline. So that's about the gist of that. I think this bill that you have before you would be highly beneficial for our school district. We have a very astute business manager who's calculated that this could really help us with our current fight with statutory operating debt.
Thank you very much. And for members, Morgan's bill will be heard tomorrow, and that's the kind of the one you're probably referring to. Thank you. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question. Would you just expand a little bit on what you meant by the budget parameters, what you would like to have happen? The only thing that we directed was the date for your
negotiation.
Thank you.
Yeah. We don't
expand
get
on that call.
We don't get a whole lot of... we don't get any other direction, truly, about how to settle a teacher contract. Each school district is operating on their own in regard to the health care, which is, of course, a huge component of this situation. And then from there, it's kind of like one school district or a few settle, and then the pack follows. And they all use it to compare against each other. And I think it would be slightly beneficial to have some oversight and some kind of overarching parameters in which to operate for salary negotiations.
This is something we heard at a hearing in Le Sueur as well, and I've been around here so long, we were actually having bills on this 15 years ago, and we didn't pass them before regional bargaining or statewide bargaining, and so it may be an issue somebody wants to work on for next year. So thank you very much. Superintendent, are you speaking as well? No. Rep. Olson had a question. Sorry,
thank
I didn't
you,
see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You were in a different spot over there today.
Yeah,
I thought you were staff.
Ma'am, could you expand a little bit upon how, in your district situation, the governor's proclaimed 8% amounted to 0.8?
Ms. Paul, or superintendent?
I would prefer the superintendent explain that with more specificity.
That's fine.
Well, actually what happened is, I'm Jerry Nesson, the superintendent. I didn't think I would have to talk because obviously I have very eloquent board members that can do this. The scenario was is we're a district that is suffering from declining enrollment. And that's part of the funding mechanism where we are declining enrollment. So all these things. And we also, a regional center, we have a tremendous cost in special education. So between the two, we're getting very shorted on the funding formula. The scenario is that in 1971, we had 4,200 students. In 1995-96, we had 3,400 students. Right now, today, we are at 2,500 students, and our next five classes are all graduating over 200 students, and we're bringing in 150 in the kindergarten area. So we are a district that is in dramatic change. We are going from a rather large district to a small one, and the real issue that we can, our revenue stream is going down faster than we can reduce our expenses. Our expenses are still going up with everything from staff costs to gas, natural gas, all of those things. They're going up. So for us to dramatically reduce our expenses at the same level our revenue is down, it's very difficult for us to do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very, very much. Brainerd. Welcome, and if you could state your name for the tape as well.
Good afternoon. My name is Amy Gitchell. Some of you may not remember me, but I remember you. I was here for the property tax meeting a couple of weeks ago, so what I have to say may sound a little familiar, might be a little eloquent, but I also have a couple solutions. So I want to take a chance to thank Madam Chairman and the representative to take time out of this whirlwind session. I know you guys have been running at a very fast pace. I come here today from a little town up north called Nisswa, on the northern edge of ISD 181, also known as Brainerd. Ours is a beautiful area full of trees, lakes, and wildlife. Most of the wildlife in our little town is the most beautiful kind, not the kind with gills or eight-point antlers, the kind that is created by love, the kind that walks around in untied tennis shoes with missing teeth, the kind that whispers secrets to one another on the bus, decorate their lockers, publicly love recess, but privately have a passion for math or reading. The kind that giggles during lunch, the kind that sings and paints and thinks science is cool. It is a certainty that all wildlife play a role on planet Earth, but this wildlife is the future of our planet. They will be the product of their foundation, the foundation that we create. We can give them love, we can give them discipline, we can give them support, but that is not enough, for there is one thing we owe them. We have an obligation, the obligation to educate them, just as we were educated and those before us were educated. We must teach them. We must feed this wildlife, feed them math, feed them science, shower them with music, art, and books. Let them grow from these feedings, grow into people we are proud to know, people that can contribute locally, compete globally, and find a healthy balance between the two. And most importantly, maintain a system that continues to educate generation after generation. Education is our future, and that future is in jeopardy. I am here to tell you loud and clear, our future is in jeopardy. Not from an asteroid hurling towards Earth or from some terrible disease. The future is in jeopardy because we as Americans, as Minnesotans, and as Brainerdites are not investing financially in our kids. The time has come to make this investment the top priority. We as a community have done everything in our power to raise money to fight budget shortfalls and increasingly difficult financial challenges. We look around and we say, where's the funding? How are we supposed to keep paying for all this school stuff? And we held fundraisers, auctions, and raffles. We added up all the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. We sold spiritware and we flipped pancakes until we could flip no more. We put away the syrup, threw our spiritware in the washing machine, and added up the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. So we bottled and sold water, clipped soup labels, wrote grants, and served spaghetti to anyone that would eat it, and added up all the proceeds and said, let's keep going. We'll get there. We could probably wrap this entire building three times over with the amount of wrapping paper we've bought year after year. So we gathered in our spaghetti-stained, syrup-coated spiritware, ate soup, drank warrior water, and wrapped presents for the auction. And we scratched our heads again and asked, where's the money? And then one day the district and the school board said, we have found a solution. We know where to get the money. We'll ask the community to commit the money to education. We'll have a referendum. And then we'll have the money we need to maintain the level of education that has made this area so desirable to so many people. Because we all know that not only does a community define a school defines a community. So we knocked on doors and said, opportunity is here. Please vote yes. Please vote yes for kids. Vote yes for education. Vote yes, vote yes, vote yes. We had a wonderful parade, dozens of informational meetings and signs in our yards. We worked very hard to explain to our neighbors why it was so very important. And they looked at us, and they said that they had talked to a guy that said the school district had plenty of money and this was just a bluff to get more money out of the community. All will be fine, they told us. You'll see. And we voted in record numbers, and the referendum failed big time. And those people were right. We were fine. The next day, nothing happened. Buses ran, teachers taught, and students learned. You see, they explained that aside from the proverbial six-mile uphill hike and a perpetual blizzard, that when they were in school, they didn't have anything fancy, and everything turned out just fine. And we listened, and we thought, well, maybe these folks do know something. And slowly, those fancy things they spoke of began to be defined. Things like keeping our schools open. Things like 80-plus teaching jobs gone in 1 year. Things like extracurriculars at the middle school level gone in 1 year. Things like an 8x10 area of carpet on the floor in an elementary classroom for children to sit on and interact. Gone to make room for desks in 1 year. Things like a teacher's aide to help one teacher work with 30 to 40 students in one room while another room sits totally empty. Things like 50% of our elementary students having to change schools. Oh, and things like sports and extracurriculars at the high school level. All those fancy things we can do without. No, no, you see, they said, we didn't have the astronomy club and we played baseball in an old field and came home when our mothers yelled for us. And we smiled at them and we thought, you didn't need the astronomy club. You likely had a two-parent family with a dad that took you out in a pup tent to see moon and stars. You could play baseball in that field because your mother was at home and knew where you were. And those people that let you play baseball in their field, they let you do that because they never once considered that your parents would sue them when you needed stitches for falling off the very fence you climbed over to get to the field in the first place. And we smiled and said to those folks not in support of funding education, have you volunteered in a classroom lately to help ease the burden? If you can't give financially, maybe you can give your time. Oh, no, they said, our kids are grown and gone. Oh, no, no, we have jobs. We'll be in Florida this winter, but come by in the fall and we'll buy some wrapping paper. And we tell them, we share with them how little at Little Nisswa School, we had over 1,000 parent volunteer classroom in the classroom. 1,000 parent classroom volunteer hours last year alone, and it wasn't even enough. We explained that there are some obstacles that have to be overcome through financial avenues. Sometimes sitting in reading circle or paying $12 for 16 square feet of wrapping paper just doesn't get it done. Times have changed, but the need has not. That obligation is still here and always will be. The obligation to educate. It is with a heavy heart that I will tell you that these communities, and there are many, will not or cannot do it on their own. You, as a legislative body, were elected to represent the best interests of the people. And your time is now. You must act for the people that cannot vote for you, but are the ones that need you the very most. Educating our youth is not just one piece of the puzzle. It is the glue that will keep the entire puzzle together for generations to come.
Thank you very much. That was most beautiful. Any questions? Yeah.
Solution.
Let me take a question first. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. And to that point, Representative Ward and I introduced a bill last week in property tax. Would you allude to the fact how that would help your school district?
Ms. Mitchell. Right now, many of you are probably familiar with the Brainerd Lakes area. It's kind of known as the vacation land of Minnesota, and we're so fortunate to have so many people out of the metro and either outside of the state even that own second homes in our area. I also, besides being a parent, my other job is as a real estate broker. and I sell vacation properties. And when the bill was introduced, that was to lift the exemption on seasonal recreational residential properties, to lift the exemption on those folks as far as taxing them on the referendum. Right. I was trying to think if it was a referendum or levy was the word of, right. And so that was the bill that was introduced that when I had the opportunity to visit with the tax committee. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's something that I think it's 20% of the homes in our area fall into that category.
And, you know, when that was done, we used to have commercial, industrial, and seasonal rec homes. Both were supposed to be the safety valve for education after that great property tax takeover by the state. If we somehow reneged on our promise, then we were supposed to go back to those two sources and get some money from them for education. And when we were short of money after that, I came forward with a bill. We could only come forward with bills that year if we had ways to fund them. And I had a bill funded through that safety valve, and there was quite a bit of testimony against it. So they are both commercial, industrial, and seasonal recs are powerful lobbies.
They are.
But I'm glad to hear you say we need to look for somewhere to get more money and not just keep taking it from one or the other.
Exactly. And one of the gentlemen that was polite enough to testify on behalf of the cabin owners, and I have no issue with cabin owners. I just truly believe that you pay to play. It's just how it works. And he was talking about, you know, you lose your land, you lose your brand. And the fact of the matter is that Minnesota is recognized not only as the land of 10,000 lakes, but we are paramount in education. And that is so important. You know, your property value is directly impacted by the quality of your schools. And if anybody doesn't know that, that would surprise me greatly. When I work with people that are moving to our area, that's what they talk about. Where are the good schools? And I'm a realtor, so I would never steer them, but I send them to the right website.
Thank you very
much. Solutions. It's a weird one, but I was driving down here, and I'm thinking about my speech that's all about wildlife, and I'm driving by all these cars, and all of them have these license plates on them, and they're all talking about save the wildlife and save the loons. Why don't we get, you know, or save the golden gophers? You know, how does that work? How does somebody get into the license plate system? We have people in our area that are more than willing to give money. They just want to make sure that it's going directly to education.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Wilmer.
You for the opportunity.
Yep, Wilmer.
Okay. Madam Chair, the representative.
I know, but this segment is up, and we actually have Stillwater here, too, so we're going to get them in if we keep on schedule. So we'll go to Wilmer. Thank you. It's good to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you, Representative Greiling and members of the committee. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk about education funding. My name is Kathy Leadham, superintendent for the Wilmer Public Schools. And again, it is a pleasure to be here today. We are here collectively to really respond to the education funding crisis that we're experiencing. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the emergency bill or the lights on bill, whatever we want to term it, regarding funding moving into 2008 and 2009 school year. We know that the next year is a major funding year for education. There's a lot to be done at that time. But right now, we are in an emergency situation, and that's basically what I am here to address. In Wilmer, since I've been a superintendent beginning in the year 2000, we've cut well over $3 million. For next year, we're anticipating in excess of $1.2 million. You will hear that refrain time and time again today, or frankly, with any educational entity that you talk to regarding public education in Minnesota. It is a dilemma. We will likely be impacting close to 25 professionals who will no longer have their positions after we finish with our reduction. This is happening at a time when we're experiencing an economic downturn, indeed perhaps a recession. I guess the jury is out about whether or not we're in a recession or we're anticipating a recession. But we're exacerbating that whole concept as around the state we're putting more and more people into the unemployment ranks And, of course, that's a key indicator when it comes to economic health and vitality. So, frankly, schools right now are in the business of contributing to that issue. We're all increasing class sizes across the board, and certainly that's the case in Willmar. All at a time when we're really trying to step up to the plate and educate our children for a very different future. Just when we're trying to increase our experiential learning and applied learning, we're increasing class sizes, and really, you might say, encouraging our teachers to move in a stand and deliver direction through no fault of their own. They have done excellent work in trying to really embrace the changes that are needed to prepare our students for a very different world. We have been talking about looking at dealing with our deferred maintenance and facilities needs, and I had the privilege of testifying to a House committee a month or so ago about that whole arena. Now we've decided to place that on the back burner because we need to go out for another operating levy referendum in the fall. That trumps everything else. And you've heard testimony from other districts just about how this envelops a community that's trying to find a revenue infusion to keep their schools going. We understand that Minnesota and the nation are experiencing challenging economic times. I think all of us, when we pull up to the gas pump to fill up our cars, we look around at the other pumps and wonder, what is that person doing without in order to put gas in their car? We understand this. And I think all of us are very sensitive to what this is doing to the average citizen and average wage earner. Schools are preparing students for a very different future. We're aware of that as well. And again, a recession is a terrible time to be thinking about adding additional tax burdens to any of our citizens. But I will address that in just a second. So there is a need, I think you would all agree, for a revenue infusion that will positively impact education in the state of Minnesota. Children and young people do not have a chance to repeat the years that are lost when opportunities are eliminated. We have to think about that. There are some things we can put on the back burner and recoup later on. In education, children don't repeat second grade or their seventh grade experiences or their 11th grade experiences. It's a one-shot deal every year along the way. The economic engine of this state and the nation depend on the children that are in school today. We are all dependent upon that, and I think that's crystal clear to everyone. In Willmar, we're trying to respond to the changes that are needed. We work with grants. We have a match with a grant and local funds to have Project Lead the Way available for our students. It's all a part of the science, technology, engineering, and math. We have a federal grant that has allowed us to implement Mandarin Chinese. Again, looking at how flat the world has become, looking forward as to what our students need. Not local money, federal money. We've increased the opportunities in math and science. We're responding to the new standards and the new requirements. We have just submitted a federal grant for elementary counselors. We're in dire need there in that whole arena. We've increased physical activity because we're concerned about childhood obesity and the diseases that accompany that whole area as well. We have bullying prevention programs as most districts around the state have. We have just joined an online learning consortium, Infinity, as a way to further respond to children's needs. So we think we're doing our part, like other districts. It could be any district sitting in my place right now talking to you about this. So what are some possible solutions? You know far more than I do. But let's just even think in terms of lottery proceeds. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I think the wildlife probably have a more secure source of revenue than the children in our state. And, you know, it's sad to say, and I the comments from my predecessor from Brainerd really resonated with me, because we have to think about our priorities. That's where the tough decisions come in. I have been talking for years, and I've written editorial commentaries about expanding the sales tax to clothing. I know that's not a popular idea, but it is an option. It is a potential solution. Or broadening the sales tax to cover other services. At least this brings in more money to the state, and frankly, some of these types of taxes, a person can control somewhat. They can decide how much they're going to be spending in some of these areas. In increasing the income tax surcharge, depending on certain areas of income. That certainly is another avenue that's open to the legislature. The rainy day fund. I spoke to a legislator today who said it's raining. It is. I mean, this is what emergency funds are for. We have a crisis on our hands for next year. Next year is a very big problem for schools across the state of Minnesota. We can't make it on the revenue that is dedicated for 2008 and 2009. I don't need to remind you, but since I have the floor, I just will mention that the Constitution in Minnesota requires the legislature and requires the citizenry to make sure that we are adequately and appropriately funding education and transportation. Of course, as citizens, we want other services as well. I'm not speaking against them. You have done the job this last month with transportation. You have stepped up to the plate. You have led the way. And now I'm asking you to do that for education as well. We are at that critical point. We're counting on you to lead, to be the leaders for our children, for our school systems, and for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Leedon. Very nice. Representative Ansel.
I really enjoyed your, thank you, Madam Chair. I really enjoyed your presentation. My only question is the phrase, certain areas of income, code for something, and could you elaborate a little bit?
Superintendent Leedon.
Yes. Representative and members of the committee, I don't pretend to be an expert on how you might want to sort and sift income levels.
Okay.
But to me, it seems there's an opportunity to look somewhat at ability to pay based on income. And I'm not an expert in that. I'm really treading on thin ice to even venture.
You did very well. You did very well. Thank you.
Representative Ansel, maybe she means my bill that would put the top tier back to where it was before, 99.
I'll let her
and,
speak.
That would be going from 7.78 or something to 8.5, and it gets about, depending on the year, 225 to 250 million per year. That would be enough for the lights on.
That will be appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank Cloud.
That sounds like a 70.
Yeah. I wrote down that we're going to add. We're going to put those on our PowerPoint.
I'm just collecting here.
Okay. Superintendent Leedon. We were so inspired by her comments that we have side chatter in the classroom. But now we're ready to listen to St. Cloud, who's ever going first. If you could state your name.
Superintendent Bruce Watkins, and I'm here with board member Joanne Dorscher and former teacher and community supporter Carol Hamilton. And we'll all speak for a brief period of time. Committee members, Chair Riley, thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns with you today. I can tell that it must be tiring, if not overwhelming, to hear so frequently and so consistently about the dilemmas in Minnesota public schools as it relates particularly to financing. We know you wrestle with that problem and problems that range from health and human services, transportation, and of course, what brings us here today, education. Ironically, you probably know too that we, back at local districts, hear the same types of concerns and basically about the same things. We hear because our district, St. Cloud Area Schools 742, will adopt a budget this spring that alters our own transportation system. It alters our student services. It alters the very education that we will provide for 9,500 students. Earlier today, you heard about a spiral, and several speakers have talked about a spiral. And if you're not familiar with what they're referring to, it's a spiral that happens when you are short of revenue and you make cuts. And in a state such as Minnesota with great school choice, those cuts create an exodus from your school district. That exodus takes with it the per pupil funding. You therefore have a loss of revenue. You have no way to cope with the loss of revenue, so you make cuts. Isn't that where the spiral started, you'd say? Yes, it is. That's why it's a spiral. It's a harmful, detrimental spiral to communities where cuts equal an exodus equals a loss of revenue. The loss of revenue stimulates more cuts. As we budget for next school year, we'll face the fact that even though 7,172 voters in our district voted to continue an already unpopular property tax and support an operating levy, that 7,300 voted against it. So by a margin of 160 votes out of 14,000, the community decided that we will lose $4.5 million in referendum for next year. We'll create a budget that deals with that loss and deals with all other inflationary increases that we see. But what does that mean for St. Cloud? It means that next year we'll plan for budget reductions and budget adjustments and the use of a fund balance or one-time monies to deal with $4.8 million in loss. We will use about $2 million of our fund balance. We'll use another $1 million out of some one-time money. Don't worry, all approved by the UFARS law, so we'll make sure that we're playing according to the rules. When the bottom line, we'll cut over $1.5 million. We'll do it in transportation. We'll change the start times of our schools. We'll increase the walking distance. We'll reroute the transportation. We'll do it in special ed. But in special ed, in order to affect about $500,000 worth of savings and still maintain our maintenance of effort, we'll end up cutting about $780,000 worth. In special ed, we'll do it by reducing licensed and non-licensed staff and the supplies received or provided by both students and staff. In the general fund, we'll further reduce administrative support, cut contracted services, reduce teaching staff, and increase student activity fees. This action is to get through 1 year. And as it gets through 1 year, it uses up a fund balance and the one-time types of money that I listed. The second year, there would be a need for us to further reduce by $4.3 million. The second year cuts are obviously more drastic because the fund balance will be reduced, the one-time money categories used up. Some people say, we know exactly where you can cut. You can cut in your custodians, your paraprofessionals, your teachers, and your extracurriculars. Our calculations tell us that we have 70 full-time equivalents in custodial, but to achieve this number, we'd need to cut 143. We have 300 full-time equivalents in paraprofessionals, but to reach this number, we'd need to cut 330. And we have 360 classroom teachers, not counting specialists and special ed teachers, but classroom teachers. In order to achieve this number, we would need to reduce them by 25%, or effectively add 8 to 10 students per classroom that are already crowded. Extracurriculars in total for us, when we get done counting the student fees that we charge, the gate receipts that we have, the donations and fundraisers that we coordinate, net to less than $1 million. Next year, we would need to cut more than four times that amount, and that would mean if we eliminated every one of those activities. For historical purposes, I've asked that you pass around a graph that shows what's happened since 2002 and moving forward. It shows $19 million worth of cuts in the past 6 years, and the proposed cut that I'm speaking of in the next 2 years bring that cumulative total to over $24 million. Obviously, districts that you hear from are past any easy cuts, and they're way past, quote-unquote, cutting away from the kids or cutting away from the classroom. Today, we're here because we believe the system is broken and needs your attention. We believe that property tax and local operating levies are the most resented taxes and the poorest method of financing education that we have. We believe that an increase of 2% to the student formula 1 year and 1% to the formula next year are unrealistic and create drastic cuts. We believe that unfunded mandates force schools to cut existing programs and to attempt to raise their own property taxes. Our special ed class subsidy amounts to near $6 million for this year, almost $600 per student. That's greater than the levy referendum that we lost. We believe that the current system of negotiations ignores the fact that the Board of Ed is given the responsibility to negotiate contracts, but lacks the ability to generate the revenue necessary to complete the deal. We suggest state and regional bargaining. We believe the factors that we've named above alienate school districts from their communities at the very time we need them the most. No longer are there 75% of all of our households having school-age kids. In 2007-2008, that number's down to under 30% of our households have a school-age kid. That means that if we relied on referendum and had every parent of every child vote yes, our district could lose a referendum vote 2-1. Never before has the phrase, it takes a village to educate a child, been more true. Today we would add to that phrase, it takes a village and it takes a legislature to educate a child. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And I'm Joanne Dorsey, the school board member that's here. Thank you for this opportunity, Madam Chair and Representative. I'm representing what I hear in the community. As Bruce has been saying, the community of St. Cloud recently said no to a levy, just barely. And they said no to a renewal of a levy that had been transforming our schools. We'd been able to reduce class sizes, we increased many opportunities for students, and we had introduced more rigor into the curriculum at every level. We were training the leaders that we need for tomorrow. And I've heard several reasons for this choice made by people who voted against our levy. You know, the economy, their current and future needs are some of the reasons. There are a couple in particular that come to the front to consider. There's been a huge increase in property taxes in Minnesota over the past 7 years. One of the studies I was reading said as much as 30% in real dollars after being adjusted for inflation. And people cannot or will not be voting for more property tax. Voters in St. Cloud just before our election received a notice from the city of St. Cloud that their taxes were going up 27% next year. And so it was very difficult facing that on election day. But finally, also, there's a strong ideological argument in our community right now that levies are not the way to fund education. And the people who feel this way may be school supporters, but they have let us know that they will not be voting for any more levies. And the number of people in this group are growing. This is their way of telling the legislature to take care of funding, and I'm here to pass on that message. Please find another way. The failure of this levy has a chilling effect on the opportunities we can offer our students and on our community as a whole. Unless the levy passes next year, we will not be able to continue to offer our students the same education they've been receiving. And you've heard the cuts from Mr. Watkins. Fewer academic challenges still will be available to students. Fewer activities that develop leadership and citizenship skills. When we make changes like this, it leads to that downward spiral. In our community, there's easy access to private schools, and parents who have the means will enroll their students in those private schools, and then will pay for the transportation to those schools.
And the special ed and the textbooks.
Yes, indeed. And then parents who live on the edge of our district, who have the means, will open and enroll their children to districts that are not facing our challenges because they do have levies or because they don't have declining enrollment. For every 12 students who leave our district, we lose the equivalent funding of a teacher, that's salary and benefits. And again, cuts are made and class sizes rise, opportunities are limited, and more students leave.
Excuse me, Ms. Dorsey, I should let you know that St. Cloud is now 3 minutes over their 10 minutes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, this process divides our community. These are both the yes-no voters and no voters, children and no children. And so the answer to education funding needs to be at the state level, provide a mechanism and fund it,
so every student has opportunities to learn, to achieve what they're able to achieve, to attain leadership skills, and to become an active and contributing citizen. Let's spend the time and money we spend on levies educating students instead.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Hamilton, if you could state your name and
My name is Carol Hamilton. I am a teacher, a parent, a grandparent. I had children who went to the public school system, and I have grandchildren who are in school in two different districts in Minnesota. But most of all, I'm an advocate for public schools. In 1974, I began my career in education. Teaching has been my passion as well as my profession until I retired in December of 2006. Like any profession, my wages, health care, and retirement benefits were tied to my employment. During the course of my career, in order to stay current, knowledgeable, and employable, I was required to continue my education at my own expense. This is true for all who go into public education. But what is different about the teaching profession? Every 2 years, my salary was publicly negotiated along with health and retirement benefits. The outcomes were based on the dollars that my employers were given by an outside agency through the legislature. And my salary had to be decided before my employers knew what this amount would be. Plus, even though I was dependent on my health care and retirement, my employer was not able to figure that into the amount they had to work with. Many community members indicate that if we could just run schools like a business, our educational problems would go away. But what business is run or could survive in this manner? Our community members often feel the one thing they can control is the amount teachers receive. When times are tough, it is easy to point at teachers' salaries and benefits and say, hold the line.
Ms. Hamilton, could you summarize the rest, because we are going to, we have three more school districts, okay, and we have 25 minutes left.
Okay. Basically, I'm saying that I work on the levy. I represent a lot of different groups, parents, community members. It's hard to know who to stand up anymore because everybody has such high needs. And I think that the legislature, he's doing a really good selling job of saying that there is no impact in the classroom, and that's ridiculous. There is an impact in the classroom, and we need to come forward, admit it, and say, this is how we're going to solve the problem. Let's work together and figure out a way.
Thank you so much. That passionate statement was even better. We're going to skip the legislators and go on to the next school district. So thank you so much. Robbinsdale.
Madam Chair.
We're going to skip the legislators just because they took a little time. Is it a statement that's like one sentence or two?
Yeah, just wanted to leave a footnote. I appreciate the comments about unfunded mandates. And just in case others were leaving, I just wanted to highlight if any of the districts who've already testified had concerns with that as well, if they could get us information on cost of unfunded mandates.
That's a very good point, Representative Olson. If anybody has anything you didn't get to say or you thought of later, how to cut, how to add, or where to get the money from, or any unfunded mandates, let us know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome very much. Please state your name and
yes,
go for it.
Chair Grayling, my name is Stan Mack, Superintendent of Robbinsdale Area Schools, and I note that the hook could be coming quick, and superintendents tend to be long-winded. I'm going to turn over to ultimate parent volunteer, parents in the district volunteer, Jackie Wells, who will speak first, and I can monitor and adjust along the way if necessary to come into time frame.
But
Jackie is an accountant by background and has spent a lot of time learning and understanding school finance in addition to being a wonderful parent volunteer.
Thank you, Superintendent Mack. Welcome, Ms. Wells, if you could restate your name for the tape.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Jackie Wells, a 19-year resident of Golden Valley in the Robbinsdale School District and a parent of a fifth grader at Noble Elementary. I'll take just a few minutes to let you know about the dire effects of our school district caused by state funding that hasn't kept up with inflation. For this year, our school district implemented budget cuts of $4.5 million. For next year, we're cutting $5.4 million, and without any additional state help, we'll be cutting $4 million plus next year. That represents more than 15% of the budget, which isn't perhaps as dire as some of our fellow districts, but still a rather significant amount. Next year at Noble Elementary, the fifth grade classrooms will have 36 kids, and the fourth grade classes will only have 35. If any of you have spent much time in the classroom as I have as a volunteer, you know how difficult it is to give the necessary attention to so many kids learning at so many different levels in the crowded classroom. In addition to increasing the class sizes in all grades, K through 12, our school district is eliminating all elementary art teachers, the elementary gifted and talented teachers, all middle school, after school activities and athletics, and many high school activities and athletics. I was in a meeting this morning with representatives from our district 17 schools. We were talking about the many efforts being undertaken by parents and other community members to raise money to restore some of these activities. For example, if we find five people to donate $100 each, we can bring back the one-act play. Or if six people donate $1,000 each, we could bring back ninth grade volleyball for one school. I bought a book of raffle tickets to help fund middle school activities such as the yearbook and the chess club. It's exciting that our community is getting involved with helping our schools, but it's terribly concerning to me that we're reduced to selling raffle tickets and begging for donations to try to fund some of these important school activities. I consider this to be gambling with our students' futures. I question how this fits into the state of Minnesota's constitutional mandate to provide a general and uniform system of education. And even if we were allowed to, I'm pretty sure we couldn't sell enough raffle tickets to pay for the 5.5 teachers that my son's school will lose next year. The Robbinsdale District has a shortfall in funding for special education of about $8 million. It's untenable to me that the state and federal governments, in essence, pit parents of students in special education against the parents of students in general education in making budget decisions. This fall, I, along with hundreds of parents and other community members, worked hard on our operating levy campaign. As you perhaps know, that effort was unsuccessful. During the campaign, we told our voters the district would cut $5 million in specific expenses if the levy did not pass. However, the organized Vote No campaign sent a mailing to district residents stating that we could possibly save $5.5 million of expenses if we simply threw out all the students who were open enrolled into our district. This is, of course, patently false, but was difficult to rebut in the few days remaining before the vote. I question the school financing system that allows this to occur. And as a sidelight, that $8 million is just under what we were asking for in our levy. The $8 million special ed cost subsidy, sorry. The other problem we have in raising money through levies is that our district has an above average number of households with residents aged 65 or older, about 24%. This makes it a difficult decision for our school board to ask the voters for more money and may cause us future problems with passing levies because the property tax burden tends to fall the hardest on those with a fixed income. Increasing next year's funding from a 1% increase to a 3% increase means about $2 million to our district. We will still certainly need to make many budget cuts, but perhaps we wouldn't have to increase elementary class sizes as much, might be able to get back elementary art teachers. Some of these could truly help our kids grow to be productive citizens, which is what we all care about. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak before you.
Thank you very much for this and for all the work it sounds like you do in the district. Superintendent Matt.
Yes, thank you, Chair Growling, and members of the committee. We are really grateful that you're taking this time today to just listen to us whine a bit. And we're whining with attempted grace, but I can tell you it has been traumatic. Thank you again for your outstanding efforts on behalf of Minnesota School District. But we're in a difficult fight. And in our district, we've been sharing a major trauma in the past 6 months as a result of a number of issues in the adequacy of school funding, that the funding system, the funding mechanism that you have in place is not working. In fact, I would bluntly state that it's broken. It is causing great harm to Robbinsdale area schools, the school district's children, the communities that we're serving. I'm going to skip a whole part about bragging about our district. We'll later provide it to you in script. We are a diverse school district, moving from 22.8% of students of color in 2000 to 44.2% students of color in 2007-2008. Our poverty levels have moved from 22.6 to 37% in that same 9-year period. We have a district that the average mobility rate is nearly 20%. One out of every five students is not the same one that's in the classroom at the beginning of the year. Our ELL population has tripled in 9 years. 14% of our students speak 51 different languages. We have responded to the changing learning needs in our school district with comprehensive district-wide curriculum reform. We are attempting to serve all students. We have many initiatives in place, both from private sources, the Cargill Foundation, the Knight Foundation, the federal government. All are aiding us in many grant programs. We have some $6+ million worth of soft money grants in place seeking help for our students. In spite of these achievements, the financial foundation continues to erode. We have cut $9.5 million in the past 4 years from our operating budget as the school district, and the results of a successful 2001 operating referendum, we had hoped to protect and cautiously use the proceeds of those referendums for the 10-year authorized period. Instead, because of inadequate, unstable state finances, we were forced to cut our school programs and increase class size within 4 years of 2001 referendum passage. An average of 2.22% increase in foundation formula per year simply is not adequate to counter the inflationary increases in operational costs. The ever-increasing shortfall of inadequate special ed English language learner transportation funding is forcing us to dismantle a high-quality school system for our students. To give you a wonderful example of a system that is broken, in fiscal year 2007, $8-plus million of the cross-subsidy of our referendum of $13 million in 2001 was to pay for special ed. $4 to $5 million left to absorb inflation. Our governor, who, by the way, I knew as a 7th and 8th grader, as a student at South St. Paul, as a teacher, I'm old enough to remember that, speaking at least five times in the last 12 months, has said school finances have been in turmoil for the last 30 years. Being a political historian and a special educator, I can tell you that in 1977 to 2007, that rings very true in the fact that that's the same year, 1977, when Public Law 94-142, the special ed mandating federal level special ed services, went into effect. Why are finances screwed up for 30 years? Trace and do the history before we preach about mismanagement. Based on the need to adequately fund our schools, school board approved unanimously a resolution calling for the expansion of our operating referendum last summer for some $9.5 million. An outstanding citizen committee led a vote yes campaign for our November 2007 election to be opposed by a organized no vote effort supported by a small group of local residents guided by Mr. Paul Doerr from Iowa, successfully defeated the referendum by 1,000 votes. The number of no votes were within 5 of our projections, but the number of yes votes were diminished as the Doerr-driven campaign discouraged yes voters by blatant lies through U.S. mail, billboards, newspaper ads, direct mail, and robocalls the night before the election. I publicly called the information distributed lies and now have been named in a federal district court lawsuit seeking the court's permission by these individuals to not have any agency or individual regulate their free speech on matters related to election facts. We in the school district lovingly refer to this case as the Right to Lie lawsuit. In the meantime, since November, our school district has been torn apart by needing to dismantle another $5.5 million worth of programming for next year that Jackie described so well. Not because of declining enrollments, but because of financial limitations. Dividing the community and needing to even look potentially at closing a school before its time because of financial limitations, not declining enrollment. Within 3 months, I must have up to another $5 million worth of cuts for our board to consider for the 2009-2010 school year. We will have then cut over $15 million in 3 years from programming and services to our students. The morale of our students, their parents, and caring employees is simply at an all-time low. I have personally been threatened, requiring protection for myself and my family, and the no vote leadership have placed a petition net seeking directing the board to not consider renewing my employment contract. I must continue to speak publicly, truthfully, and will without waiver on the need for the learners in Robbinsdale area schools. By the way, they're really quite successful. After 2 months, they had 11 signatures that were protected. I have administered schools for 32 years and have been a school district superintendent for 25. And at the end of the school year, at 25 at the end of the school year, and will have always had faith in you, the leaders, the elected leaders in the state of Minnesota, to remember that the education of children and youth were the most important responsibility. And I have watched the legislature for all these years and have been here repeatedly. I know that you have other priorities that you must face, but I have no doubt that in the past year, your priorities have become messed up. I will preface the following remarks by saying I grew up in New Ulm, a strong baseball community, attend a number of Minnesota Twins baseball games each year. However, this body and your Senate colleagues and our governor approved the exception for Hennepin County to build a baseball stadium for a billionaire owner and millionaire players, and at the same time placed us in the position in the same county, Hennepin County, to ask, to beg, to cajole voters to support the most important resources for children and youth in our state through voter-approved referendums that are frankly wrong, inappropriate, and effectively do not fulfill your constitutional requirements. The fact that priorities in the state, bluntly, are screwed up. 10 days ago, the supermajority of you approved a transportation bill that needed to be acted on for more than 20 years. Transportation is one of the constitutional mandated responsibilities. I won't quote, I'll skip the quote from the Constitution that puts you in a position of having a uniform system of public schools. The need to be equally as brave as you were 10 days ago to find means of funding adequately and uniformly what we face from our competition in our sister schools of $600 to $700 more. Children across the street from each other have school districts that have been able to convince their voters and their economic well-being is better off to have $600 to $700 more per child to go across the street. Why wouldn't they? The uniform system of public education written by our forebears who wrote the Constitution and improved it in October 150 years ago seems to be falling on deaf ears. Please be brave, find the resources, what is right for our most important resource, and that's the children and youth of the state of Minnesota and the Robbinsdale School District. Frankly, I join with many other districts, and I've collected lots of districts across the state, and I echo the comments of my colleagues and from other districts across the state. We are in a crisis. You need to respond to the crisis. Yes, roads and bridges are important, but aren't children more important? When are you going to act on it? Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Mack. And I, music to my ears, I didn't vote for the stadium. I'm not going to ask other legislators how they voted. But you make very good points, and I appreciate your testimony. And we'll go straight to Invergrove Heights. And we have 10 minutes left, so Stillwater was a late add to the agenda. I will leave it up to you if we get to hear from them or not. You were on the schedule, so you can take your 10 minutes. If you don't, then we'll hear from Stillwater. Welcome, and please state your name for the tape.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Deirdre Wells. I'm the superintendent of Invergrove Heights. And thank you on behalf of the students of the public education of the state of Minnesota for the opportunity to address you this afternoon. Quite honestly, I've never spoken about anything for 3 or 4 minutes in my life. You might very well have time when I'm through. Thinking of being blunt, I usually quite am, so be prepared. Invergrove Heights School District will cut $1.2 million this year, 3.09% of its budget, not unlike many districts in the state. Previous to this year, this district cut $2.4 million. Our special education cost subsidy will be $3,360,000 this year. Now, granted, I'm only a superintendent, but I can still do that math. There is a problem right there. To arrive at our $1.2 million, every function that required an expenditure was categorized as mandated by federal or state law, rule or regulation, or it was considered essential to maintaining a viable, relevant school program or an enhancement to the essential structures. Recognizing that everything we do impacts the students, there will be no enhancements left in Invergrove Heights in 2008. And essentials such as overloads in high school science and world language classes, high school business and technology classes altogether, will be eliminated. Class sizes are on the rise again. Invergrove Heights is a second-ring suburb. It is a mixed residential community where private wells are common. City sewer and water infrastructure and expansion needs are expensive. City and county assessments of residence properties are high. And the highest number of new properties built are for senior-assisted living. Our $344 levy expires this year. The lowest levy in the 12 districts around in comparison, and this will be an uphill battle.
This levy was defeated 2-1 in the previous fall. The next level of cuts for ISD 199, $1.6 million, will be the essentials. One-of-a-kind pre-AP program put in place at the K-12 level to give all students a shot at advanced coursework. Gone. High school AP study assist programs specifically geared to our minority students so that they too have a shot at advanced placement. Gone. AP classes themselves and anything else that is not specifically tied down to one of those unfunded or underfunded mandated programs will be gone. I have a few suggestions for you. I know they are not the specifics. It's not my bailiwick. But here's just something to toss out there from a few like-minded people such as myself. First, do no further harm. No new regulations from MDE, no new rules, no new statutes, whatever sheep's wool they will be hidden in, none. Unless the new money, inclusive of the inflationary cost for every one of those minutes spent on them, comes along with it. Fix what you have. The system is unnecessarily burdensome and increasingly skewed. And I can give you an example. Do you seriously believe that a square foot of asphalt costs less to replace in a smaller district than it does in a larger district? Please, the percentage of your budget that goes to these types of things must be the same. Change the ballot information. We weren't going to increase their taxes. It would have been the same taxes. But there it sat, on the ballot. What would you vote for when all we hear every day out of the chute is taxes are evil? Please. Number two, be honest and transparent. No more shell games. Stop robbing Peter to pay Paul. If we can't or are unwilling to get the revenues for a 21st century school system, then let's be honest about it. Level the ball field. The increasing reliance on local levies has created greater disparities between the districts. Where you live, how much of a home you can afford, how affluent you are, does matter. It is not an unbiased system. You may not have the same public education. We will not allow it. What is the constitutional shortfall? And finally, I'll just add one little point. My father fought in World War II. My parents were high school graduates. For 11 farm kids, I was the best, in some very lean times, education was touted as a great equalizer. My parents sacrificed much so that we could benefit, all 11 of us, secondary education. More schools were built, more teachers were trained, more students educated than ever before. And that was their legacy. Have we already defined ours? This is Ted Penslet. He is a parent of two students in the Invergrove High School District, and he would like to speak to you about his views on public education.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members, thank you, Dr. Wells. Ted Trenzeluk, Invergrove Heights, parent of two sons in the school district. This is the Princeton Review AP Study Guide, used as a supplemental text in my son's AP History class. My son's in 10th grade, okay? This program is part of the AP Athenian program, the Able Learner program in Invergrove Heights that starts kids in second grade right on up to high school and takes them through advanced classes and takes them to this level. Why do I tell you this? Well, this, as you heard, is one of the first things that gets on the budget block, the chopping block when budgets get tight. And for a couple of reasons. One is it gets parents like me juiced up. I know that, by the way. You don't necessarily take that. And the other is actually a myth, because the myth is that it's only a handful of smart kids that get affected, when in fact it's more than that, because there are more of these smart kids than you think. Plus, this program raises everybody's game. These kids are mentors and leaders to all their peers, and I've seen that. The teachers who teach these kids are rejuvenated. There's an extra bounce in their step. There's pride in the school system. For concerns at the state and national level that our education system is slipping, I take any one of these kids and mop the floor with their peers in Europe and Asia. I'm telling you that as well. Okay? The notion of education to the lowest common denominator has all been eradicated in Invergrove Heights. But unfortunately, when things start to cup, that one creeps back in. And for the good representative who's looking for solutions, plain and simple, before throwing any more money at this, or God forbid taking money away, you need to start over. You need to completely overhaul the system. Voters don't get it. Administrators can't work in it. And as smart as Dr. Wells is, she's not a CPA. And that's the level that they're at with the tweaking that goes on. I sat the last levy out because, frankly, the one before that, my head was about to explode, explaining the difference between a levy and a bond. And multiple levies and the mandates, oh no, that funding comes from this source, that funding, it's insanity. You can't keep piling money onto that. You have to start over. Okay? And lastly, the other thing is we're getting feed to death. Everything, sports, my kids are involved in sports, band, stuff here, $17 right here. It's all extra. I bag so many groceries at Cub and fundraisers, they think I work there. Okay? So I just wanted to give you a parent's perspective and some color commentary. This is real. These kids are doing well. People from other communities, Lakeville, Egan, come to this program. It's nationally recognized. And Dr. Wells could even mention some of that. So please, start over. Don't band-aid this. Start over.
I would only add, Ted and I just met, and we're quite enamored with each other. But one of the things I will add is that we purposely did not throw out threats that we would not be carrying out when we ran that referendum campaign last fall. We were asked point blank by the various papers in the area and whatnot, the reporters, why aren't you doing that? Well, because we wanted to be real about it. We didn't think that throwing out threats was the right way to go about education. What Ted doesn't know is now that we've done this last round of cuts, I'm not threatening. There isn't much left that isn't mandated, and these happen to be programs that are not mandated. Are they the best thing for the education of every single student? Whether they're his sons who are operating at a very high level with great parent involvement, or whether they're the majority of our poor little students who just come to school because it's the safest place to be for 6.5 hours a day. This is the way to do education. This is what we're giving up. Where will Minnesota be? You can rebuild the bridge, but it's going to take you a lot longer than 24 months to rebuild this educational system. Take my word for it. Thank you.
Thank you
very, very much. I'm going to say a couple things, and then I think we will still, I have never done this. Members know I always adjourn on time, but I think for those of us who can stay, I'm going to give Stillwater a little bit of time over time. But has this been passed out yet? Okay, the pages will be passing out to legislators, a chilling call to St. Paul school superintendents speak out about the Minnesota's failed funding system. These are provided to us by the head of the Minnesota Association of Superintendents, Charlie Pike, and he's in the back of the room. Thank you. I don't think people will hear anything differently in this than they heard today, except some more gory details, and it seems to be unanimous across the state. I want to thank Mary Ciccone from Parents United, Sam Walseth from MREA, Scott Prunquist from AMSD, and Brad Lundell from C for arranging for these very, very eloquent speakers. Before we hear from Stillwater, you can come up right now. I will tell you all, the House VFL Caucus is meeting in this room at 4 o'clock, so if you want to just attack your own legislators when they come in, that would be very appropriate. Stillwater.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Beverly Petrie, and I was the co-chair of the levy campaign last fall. I spent probably most of the year working on it, and we were somewhat lucky. We had three questions. One was to renew what we had with passed, and questions two and three, which were intended to lower class sizes, failed. This is the first year that Stillwater will not cut budgets in 8 years. So we feel very fortunate about that. Of course, we don't know what you have coming down the pike for us, so we don't know what's going to be happening in the future. I think that it should be clear from everything that's been said today that this system has become highly politicized. It is exceedingly difficult to try to persuade voters to vote for a levy when all they need is one tiny piece of information from the no voters
that will give them the opportunity to say no to increase taxes. I mean, it's just human nature. This system really needs to be redone from the ground up. And I guess the only suggestions that I have, and I don't want to take a lot of your time because I know you need to get on, but okay, it's an off year. You're not doing any funding. Can't you just form like a Blue Ribbon Committee or something? I mean, get Dr. Wells and Dr. Mack on the committee because they seem to have some great ideas. And look at some ways to redo the system. I mean, I'll give you a couple suggestions. I mean, why not get the state out of the transportation business? I mean, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one who cringes every time I see a high school bus go by with 15 kids on it. It makes no sense whatsoever. Why not give school districts the opportunity to levy for what their needs are? I mean, you guys put through CCOMP 2 years ago, and how does that get paid? Property taxes, which voters probably don't know that they have no opportunity to vote on that. It's just something that they have to pay for. I think that there are probably lots of ideas that people could come up with, but you really do need to fix this system. I've got two kids that are in high school right now, and I have to tell you honestly, I am so glad that they're almost through the system. I mean, if I were making the decision on where my kids were going to go to school and they were in kindergarten, and knowing what I know now, I just don't know if I'd send them to public schools. I mean, I kind of look at public schools as a frog in a pot of cold water. And you start turning up the temperature, and the frog sits there and sits there and sits there, and pretty soon he's just boiled. And the water is awfully damn hot right now, folks. You really need to do something about this problem. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Ms. Petrie.
Emma, your fault.
Meeting's adjourned.
Good job, Petrie.